Oh man, big show for you here today. Week 6 Sunday recap. But it was a weird Sunday, I'm going to be honest with you. We're going to start off on a weird note with a Bengals-Giants recap and a lot of talk about things that nobody cares about, like Wandale Robinson's 100-catch season and why I'm obsessed with Tyron Tracy's rushing style. Later, Andy Behrens will join the show, gloat about his Chicago Bears, give us a full breakdown on what's interesting in the Bucks-Saints game, and we commiserate with the Cowboys in a miserable showing against the Detroit Lions. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, October 14th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. It's a hell of a day to recap Week 6 Sunday slate. A very, I don't know what to call it, a very interesting, sort of weird, murky Sunday slate of games that we have to recap here. As you all know, the dear listeners of this podcast, on the Sunday recap show, we start with the solo recap of Sunday Night Football before Andy Behrens and I dive into the rest of that Sunday slate. And man, Sunday Night Football tonight, this is the exact reason why I am glad that only one of us between Andy and I has to be punished by staying up late to recap this game. I'm glad Andy is somewhere in the Chicago area getting his beauty sleep in, so he doesn't have to talk about Bengals 17, Giants 7. Weird game. Weird game in this one. Some not so great offensive performances in what looked like it could have been a sneaky shootout, a sneaky kind of like big fantasy game. In this one, we did not get that at all. We got a murky offensive performance at best here from both teams. I'll start with the Bengals side of things. You know, this was definitely one of those games where Joe Burrow's taking a lot of punishment. Even though the Giants aren't, they don't have Kayvon Thibodeau anymore, he's definitely their third best player on that defensive line. Brian Burns has been stepping up lately. Dexter Lawrence is a total problem. BJ Ojulari was excellent in this game. Zeez Ojulari in this game recorded team high 6 pressures on 26 pass rushes against the Bengals. His highest pressure rate generated in a game since week 18 of the 2021 season, according to Next Gen Stats. So pretty electric moment for this Giants pass rush against the Bengals offensive line. But I think what you saw here is, even in a game where this offense wasn't quite up to snuff, I mean, nobody was really happy with the performance offensively. A lot of the guys talked about it post game, not thrilled with what they did offensively, even though the defense stepped up. I think what you saw, you know, and please forgive me for literally quoting myself, maybe on this podcast, but I definitely wrote this exact thing in my preview article coming into this week. I said that we do all these thought exercises in the offseason about how the Bengals can evolve on offense. Like, what's the future look like with T. Higgins likely exiting in 2025? Andre Yoshivas, can he be a real two? Will Jermaine Burton step up? We get into the games, and it's abundantly clear. Like, frankly, how can you not realize it? That the offense is so much better. And like, the entire operation just doesn't have a prayer unless Joe Burrow is out there throwing haymakers to his two star receivers on the perimeter. I just, again, the offense wasn't at its best tonight, but I'm just confused as to how we could ever split these three guys up. The big reason I feel this way is because, look, Chase was definitely getting double covered in this game. The broadcast highlighted it. I think it was pretty obvious to see. And, you know, the Bengals have done a lot of work to make that harder to do than usual, because Chase is playing all three receiver positions. You know, this is something I've talked about a lot. The conversation I had with Jamar Chase way back in February at the Super Bowl about how he is dying to play more slot receiver. He wants to play more positions. He was trying to earn the coaching staff's trust. We had this conversation about that. You've started to see it come to fruition in this game. According to True Media, Chase took 11 snaps in the slot in this game. Andre Yoshivas lined up in the slot more for the Cincinnati Bengals. And still, even with that, the Giants did a pretty decent job covering Chase, giving him extra defensive attention. He only gets 6 targets in this game, 72 yards. But that leaves T. Higgins with a lot of one-on-ones. Deonte Banks, per Next Gen Stats, covered him on 87% of his routes. Shadow covered him in these one-on-one situations. And T. Higgins just got the best of him. He caught all five of his targets for 54 yards against Banks. A lot of those were critical underneath catches. Man, it's just, it's so hard for me to imagine what this offense looks like without T. Higgins, who at this point, now that he's healthy, you see what a difference maker is. He is, you know, whether he's like a true elite number one in another situation, who cares? In this situation, he's one of the best number two receivers in the NFL. He's definitely a guy you're playing every single week in fantasy. And he's probably going to go down as a pretty big draft steal now that he's healthy. Seven catches, 77 yards in this game. Elsewhere in the Bengals offense, you know, Chase Brown rips off that long touchdown run at the end here, which really masks what otherwise was kind of an inefficient ground game from the Cincinnati Bengals. But, you know, Zach Moss, I was kind of surprised he played in this game, but only averaged 2.2 yards per carry, lost a fumble. It does look like Chase Brown just straight up gives them more pop in the run game and will continue to get the ball more. Let's go over to the Giants side of things here. Yeah, man, Daniel Jones is such a weird quarterback. I know he's not a good quarterback, right? But I don't know, man. Like, you know, I've thought about Daniel Jones probably too much than I need to, because, you know, as we're having these conversations, especially in the dynasty space, like wasting our time having these conversations about, oh, it's Malik Nabers, like, why? How come he's getting it done, you know, in the Giants offense? And Garrett Wilson never did that. You know, these other guys we've made excuses for. Malik Nabers doesn't need excuses. It's like, well, Daniel Jones is better than Zach Wilson. Like, he leaps and bounds better than Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson could never in his life dream of having a game that Daniel Jones just had last week against the Seahawks. Doesn't happen. But he's still not a good quarterback, right? And you saw that in this game against a really bad Bengals defense that did play its ass off. I think just especially up front, really. And Lou Anarumo was really high on the fact he's getting these defensive linemen back. That was going to help him just run the entire operation better. You did kind of see that in this game. But Daniel Jones is making poor decisions. He holds onto the ball too long. He's inaccurate on these throws over the middle. Like, it was a very Daniel Jones night, especially because if you did have to desperation play him in fantasy, you still scammed your way to 56 yards on the ground. Whoop-de-doo. I'm definitely ready to see what this offense looks like with Malik Nabers in it, mostly because of the other pass catchers on the team. They're just... Darius Slayton is fine. All roads always end up back to Darius Slayton. The Giants try to get rid of him. They try to, well, maybe Jalin Hyatt's going to emerge. Jalin Hyatt, like, is not at all an outside starting receiver in the NFL. Darius Slayton is. He's fine. So he was the leading target getter, leading receiver with 57 yards in terms of the wideout room. I do have to mention new segment we got on the show here, and I'm so glad that we get to debut this on Sunday Night Football. We are tracking Wandale Robinson receptions here, because if you've listened to the show, you know I find this whole Wandale Robinson thing, like, distasteful. The guys at Underdog, Josh Norris and Hayden Winks, they call it the PPR scam. I love it. Perfect term. With five catches tonight, 5 for 50 on 11 targets, by the way. Disgusting. Just outrageous. Wandale Robinson is now up to 37. Shout out to Twitter user Sir Godfrey 12, listener of the podcast, gave us this idea to do this little tracker here. We're tracking Wandale Robinson until he reaches 100 receptions, because it's probably going to be one of the most disgusting 100 catch seasons in recent memory. Coming into this game, Wandale Robinson ranked fourth in the NFL in receptions and 45th in receiving yards. My good buddy Derek Klassen, who hosts the Athletic Football Show now, used to work with us at Reception Perception, charting quarterbacks. He talks about honorable ball. That is dishonorable stuff. So I'm glad that all the fantasy managers who went the dishonorable route starting Wandale Robinson here, they don't get anything great out of their 11 targets. Unless you're PPR and you scammed your way to 10 points, you'd be like, oh, I got double digits. Congratulations. I'm ready to see Malik Nabers back in this offense and put all these other guys back in complimentary roles, because they're a little too far stretched. Last note, though, guy I am encouraged. I will end on a positive note here on this recap. Tyrann Tracy. I think he looks really good. I know he only averages 2.9 yards per carry. I don't care. He didn't rip any like big long runs. Doesn't matter to me. 17 carries on the ground. He also catches 6 for 57. You know, there wasn't really a lot of evidence in terms of the box score and the results and things like that that Tracy was a receiver convert last week against the Seattle Seahawks in that surprising win. But you saw it tonight. A lot of those skills as a receiver, running some option routes, really just that check down option in the flat. But as a rusher, that's the stuff that I think it looks really good, man. He paces his runs well, keeps his pads square to the line of scrimmage. I think he looks like he's got pretty decent vision to me, and he is explosive. I know Devin Singletary is a trusted figure in Brian Daboll's circle. Obviously, they have history together dating back to their time in Buffalo. It's clear he likes him, okay? And I get it. Singletary's not going to totally go away when he probably comes back to this team next week. But I don't see how they can just completely remove Tyrann Tracy from the rotation. Again, 2.9 yards per carry. Don't care about that. What I care about is just how effective he looks and how advanced, frankly, he looks as a rusher. If you got him off the waiver wire, I think you have a pretty good pickup rest of the way. I just don't see how they can afford to take him off the field. This offense needs juice, and I think Tracy has the juice. All right, with that, we can toss to the rest of the show with Andy Behrens. We break down the games you should care about the most, the games you should care, sort of care about, and the games that could have been in the email. Let's get into the rest of the show. Joining me now, as he always does here on the Sunday Recap, is my good friend, a guy riding high right now. It's Mr. Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Who's feeling better than me? I get a Bears win that is basically settled before Fantasy Football Live even starts this morning. I get a Sam Laporta touchdown. I'm coming off a big George Kittle game. I mean, everything's coming up Behrens this week.
Iowa, what'd they do yesterday?
Hell yeah.
I don't know. Oh, I actually
man.
Don't
thanks
know.
Thanks for paying attention to Iowa's matchup with Washington. That was a dominant win. Yeah, things are good.
I mean, well, I'm glad that you're feeling great. You know, this podcast on Sunday night, you guys don't hear producer Colin, but he is with us in spirit. Literally, well, I mean, he might be in spirit at this point, but he's usually here with us. You know, he's here with us every Sunday. He's having the opposite end of the human experience, as he said earlier. Andy, yeah. fully basking in joy. He's bringing up he's feeling so good about the Bears. He's bringing up all these other things that are great about his life, especially as it relates to football. Colin's on the other end of the spectrum because of what happened to his Cowboys, which as we were starting taping the show, we're just like, okay, let's just get into it. We don't even know the final result of that as we're taping this right now, which is pretty electric, just how bad that thing got. But yes, Andy, we will start. Reminder for the people, for the new people out there. I'm so frazzled about what I just watched with the Cowboys that I don't even know where this podcast is going right now. We break the games into three categories here on the Sunday Recap Show. We talk about the games we really care about in the first section, the games we sort of care about in the second section, and the games that could have been an email in the third section. I'll be honest with you. Usually we try to keep the competitive games at the top. Didn't really go that way this week because there were a lot of non-competitive final scores in this one, starting with the game that we will begin with here, Andy Behrens, Bears 35, Jaguars 16. Take it away, pal.
Yeah, I'm not going to totally victory lap this. I think, you know, if you're looking for like a specific fantasy takeaway here, man, it's as simple as pick on the Jaguars right now. This is just like the smoldering ruins of an NFL team, and they're headed for coaching change. That much seems clear. It is wild that they are coming off this loss and they have to stay in London to play a home game in Wembley Stadium next week. This is just a wild scenario. What a ride for that team. They entered the week as the most generous pass defense in the league, just in terms of total passing yards allowed. And Caleb goes off for 4 touchdowns. Everything looked pretty easy. Even the one takeaway, I think it's the first interception that Jacksonville's had this year. The one interception that they get was just a bad ball from Caleb that should have been a touchdown. Literally should have been his 5th touchdown. He could have had a 6th touchdown later in the game. Like they left some points on the table. Really rough one from Jacksonville. I don't even think, like, we've seen Trevor Lawrence play some bad games this year, and this was not one of his worst games. Like I thought he was fine. He threw a pick that was kind of a forced throw when the game was already lost, but that's fine. missed a few things, hit a couple things. Like he wasn't, you know, I'm thinking back to Trevor Lawrence in the Cleveland game. He was terrible. You know, we've seen him far worse this year, and they just still, they weren't even competitive. They weren't competitive defensively. It was obviously on the other side for the Bears. This is two straight games in easier matchups. Obviously you had Carolina, now you get Jacksonville, and but they smoked them, which is what you want your team to do. I mean, it doesn't, you know, does it tell you everything about them? No, but man, you can feel really good as a Bears fan about what we just got from Caleb. It is a little, it's a little weird and a little concerning to me that he hasn't, and again, I think this is something that's going to come in time, because I didn't view it as a real problem when he came into the league, but man, deep throws outside the numbers are not working for Caleb, but everything else was hitting today. DeAndre Swift, another just terrific game, and terrific in the screen game too. So that's really unlocked a lot for the Bears. DJ Moore almost had a touchdown. Keenan Allen had a couple. Thought Adunze had a good game. Like, man, this was very promising. This felt good.
Felt really good. Yeah, by the way, you mentioned Jacksonville is going to stay in London. They're going to play the Patriots next week. They opened as a 6-point favorite in that game, and it's gotten so bad for Jacksonville that I'm like, I don't know about that. And the Patriots are not a good football team, in case you
didn't
know.
Listen, we'll get to Drake May later, but like, I've already written a bunch of the blurbs for the pickups column, and I'm kind of all in on Drake May. Like, I thought he looked good, and if he put up 3 touchdowns on Sunday, he's going to do something against Jacksonville next week.
Oh, he's going to do something. Yeah, we'll get to Drake May, and we'll obviously get back to the Jaguars in just a second. I'm going to focus on the Bears here before we hammer the Jags a little more before moving off this game. I think so many encouraging signs from Caleb Williams. And, you know, I feel like every time we've talked about him on this show, it felt like we've been building to a performance like this. No question he got off to a brutal start in the first game, and there were definitely some concerning things in the second game. However, all throughout the course of that, he's gotten better over the course of every single game. I think week to week, he's been an improved player. And all the while, and you know, this is something that like Nate Tyson and I talked about when we reviewed all the rookies, you can see that Williams handles a lot, right? He handles a lot of like the operations of this offense. You know, he, for a rookie quarterback, he's getting up there and making checks at the line. He's like readjusting plays. He's dealing with protections. And honestly, it's like, if you want to get off to a good start in this guy's rookie season, maybe you don't have him do things like that, right? You don't have him necessarily just carry the heaviest burden possible. However, if you do put that on him and he continues to show that he can handle it, eventually you build up to a performance like this, which obviously it wasn't perfect. There was that DJ Moore throw. There were a couple of herky jerky things throughout the course, like in the very early portion of the game. But otherwise, I thought he was darn near like flawless in this contest, you know, and he should have had that, maybe that DJ Moore touchdown. He could have had 5 touchdowns in this game. And what I think is great about this one, and it's frustrating for fantasy, there's no question about it. And you kind of knew that this is what you were getting into with these Bears pass catchers. It's just that he spread it out to so many different guys, right? He's not locked in, dialed in on one player. And I thought everybody was used kind of to the best possible versions of themselves. You know, they've cut out a lot of the nonsense players in this offense. You know, we're not getting like designed DeAndre Carter screens or you know, Gerald Everett's not a featured player anymore in this offense. Like, that's great. The ball goes to where it's supposed to go, which is Cole Kmet, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, and Rome Odunze. And I thought Odunze was used on some of these like big in-breaking routes. That's the strength of his game. He probably could have had a couple of more plays, but Caleb got pushed into chaos mode and he did well in those. You know, Keenan Allen is definitely not going to separate downfield anymore, but he can still get off the line of scrimmage really well in short areas. And when you're down near the goal line, he can catch you 2 touchdowns. Cole Kmet looked great, especially all that clear space that they'd get. I love that DJ Moore was kind of moving around the formation. So it really felt like the perfect sort of encapsulation of what we expected these Bears pass catchers to be from a role perspective. And Williams was really there from a results perspective. And I think a process standpoint as well.
Yeah, no, it's all really well said. I'll also say, and I suppose this is in support of the coaching staff, there were not a lot of, you know, there weren't like drive killing penalties, which is something that we saw earlier in the year. To your point about, you know, Caleb, I don't want to say that he never makes the same mistake twice, but you can tell that, he is, when something, when he gets a little bit of adversity, he's capable of learning from it in real time. One of the things that I was a little disappointed with after that first game against Tennessee, man, it felt like he had like 4, 5, 6 balls batted at the line of scrimmage. And we're not seeing a bunch of that. He's not taking like catastrophic losses on sacks necessarily. He's developed a couple of other moves when he tries to scramble out of the pocket. It's been really promising. And some of those, he had a lot of misses early in the year, and the numbers on, Caleb throwing from a clean pocket were pretty terrible for a couple weeks. And so much of that was literally just not being on the same page as receivers. I mean, there were like 3, 4 throws a game where he clearly expected somebody to do something other than what they did on a route. And we're just seeing less of that. So it's like real growth in real time in the season.
Caleb's coming off a QB1 overall performance heading into Sunday Night Football. 56 yards on the ground, 4 passing touchdowns. They go on bye this week, and then they get Washington, Arizona, and New England on the other side. So the Bears can really build some momentum here. It feels like all of the optimism that we had for this team is kind of like a potential sneaky playoff team, or just really like a team that can make some noise this year. It feels like we overreacted to the negative and kind of like sold those takes in the first 2 weeks. Now it feels like all that was perfectly justified at this point. Let's get to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I still feel like a lot of Bears fans really talk themselves into like, maybe this is 10 wins, maybe this is 11 wins. And that still seems a little bit far-fetched to me, even though the supporting cast is great and all that. But I could not be more content with the way that Williams has actually developed.
Absolutely. Speaking of development, the Jaguars are not developing. Their quarterback is not developing. It's funny. We were talking about this a little bit during the lead up to Fantasy Football Live before the show kicked off. I expanded kind of my thoughts on it in my Care Don't Care recap article, but it just feels like you can do this really circular argument with the Jaguars where it's just, the players around Lawrence are probably better in name value than actual on-field product. The pass protection probably could be better in down and distance situations. The coaching is terrible. The offensive scheme is, stale, to put it nicely. And still, like, you don't really, I think you can say all that and also say that Trevor Lawrence is not like an elite quarterback held back by a bad situation. I think he contributes to some of the problems. This is not the game to like stand and put your chest out there and say Trevor Lawrence stinks. Especially you pointed this out. I mean, this was the most Gabe Davis game of all time. Right? Because he catches 2 touchdowns, he probably drops 2 more, he gets like a penalty. It was a classic Gabe moment. Brian Thomas Jr., who we've obviously hyped up justifiably on the podcast, other people's like, oh, he's gonna be the best rookie from this class, he comes in here with 27 yards against a good Bears defense, and he also probably dropped a gimme touchdown in this game. Evan Ingram catches 10 for 102. That's great, but it just, again, you're left wanting by the entire offensive kind of the infrastructure around Lawrence. The run game completely falls apart. I mentioned to you guys before we got going on Fantasy Football Live that Doug Peterson's halftime interview, I mean, I've seen that look. I've had that look. I don't want to be here. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And that is how he is coaching this entire team right now. So you're right. We are absolutely careening towards a complete reset for the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's a matter of when, not if. And, Lawrence will be a part of that future for Jacksonville. And it will just be on the next people that are in charge of this team to make sure the situation around him is better. I don't know where we go with like practical fantasy advice from that, but that's just kind of my feelings about the team right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really hard to imagine. Like, even, I don't know, even if they beat New England, it's still a little bit hard for me to imagine that they come home with Peterson still coaching that team. I mean, it was like 2 weeks ago that we were having the conversation. There was a national media conversation going on around about whether Peterson had lost the team, and a handful of guys chimed in to defend him. But like, I don't know, if we're having that conversation, it's usually over. Nobody usually bounces back from that public a conversation. And there's, I don't know, I don't see a lot of reasons for hope if you're a Jags fan. Sorry. Like I'm still a believer in Lawrence's ability, but I think he also needs to be surrounded by playmakers in order to, you know, I don't see Trevor Lawrence at this point. Even though he's still a fairly young quarterback, it's not like he's, you know, fully formed necessarily. But man, he's not the, you know, climb on my back and I'll get you a win kind of quarterback right now. That's just not happening.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. We'll definitely be discussing some Jaguars as coping corner candidates on tomorrow's podcast with Dalton Del Don. That is for sure. Let's move on to a little bit more of a positive game here. Ravens 30, Commanders 23. This was expected to be a points fest, a fantasy bonanza. And, you know, generally, I think what we got, what we bargained for in this game, Andy. What stood out to you on either side?
I just thought it generally lived up to it, right? Another good game from Daniels. Doesn't get a win, but still, a couple touchdowns, very few negative plays. You can, you know, if you're a Washington fan, you can sort of tell yourself a story about, well, we were a little bit outgunned. We didn't have Brian Robinson. You know, not much on the ground, but another big Terry McLaurin game. Like, we finally have a quarterback in Washington who can, if not maximize Terry McLaurin, you know, at least get a lot out of him. So that's been really fun. They're probably a receiver away, you know, like you can see where you have to sketch in, this starting lineup a little bit more to have like a division contending, you know, deep playoff run contending sort of team, but really encouraging. I thought even in the loss on the Baltimore side, it's another monster game from Derrick Henry. That seems like it was a pretty good signing. Yeah. You know, Lamar, a good game through the air. Zay Flowers, a big game. Mark Andrews found the end zone, which felt a little bit miraculous. Mark Andrews also like had a ball hit him in both hands that became an interception that was a little bit on him. So I'm not going to say it was the cleanest Mark Andrews game, but certainly an encouraging sign that he actually scored.
Yeah, Derrick Henry has 130 plus rushing yards in three of his last four games. Lamar Jackson has gone over 300 passing yards in each of his last two games. Like, this Ravens offense is perfectly peaking. And, you know, that's something that I think kind of went under-discussed about Baltimore is, you know, we're all obsessed with the Derrick Henry signing. We're all obsessed with him and Lamar Jackson as a rushing offense. But you look from an efficiency perspective, they haven't really had to throw the ball much, you know, at least in the first month of the season outside of the Kansas City game. But from an efficiency perspective, they were a top five passing offense coming into this matchup with Washington. And look, they've faced bad secondaries in each of the last 2 weeks, right? Cincinnati is a mess. Washington is obviously a mess as a pass defense as well. But good teams go out and smash good matchups. That's what the Baltimore Ravens passing game has done over the last 2 weeks. I think quietly the offensive line, which seemed like it was going to be a concern all offseason, sure looked like a concern in week one. That unit has quietly gelled. Ronnie Stanley, I'm not saying he's back to like all pro, one of the best left tackles in the league, Ronnie Stanley, but I'm saying he's getting pretty close to that after, you know, being a guy that like rotated on and off the field. Roger Rosengarten, the rookie right tackle, has given them some pretty good play at that position. So they're still obliterating in the run game with Derrick Henry, but like we're also now getting Zay Flowers the ball downfield, not just like the Mickey Mouse screen stuff. That's resulted in him going over 100 yards in back-to-back games. Rashad Bateman has been a plus contributor pretty much all season, but especially like it's shown up in the box score the last 2 weeks. I'm really, really high on where this Ravens offense is right now. Like, and again, it'll be tough to predict going week to week in fantasy. Like, are they going to just ground and pound here? Or are they going to throw the ball? But like, shoot, week 7 against the Bucks, like, I think they can throw the ball on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. So I'm pretty excited about where this passing game is right now.
That's going to be an awesome game. I can't wait to talk about that. Like, we could, I don't know, probably record the preview podcast on that right now. Really looking forward to it. Yeah, all that's right. And they just had like a lot of summer injuries on the offensive line too, right? It wasn't, some of that was just health and availability. That looks good. Like, Likely didn't do anything much. It didn't do much of anything today, but he had some opportunities. I think it's still going to swing back and forth between Andrews and Likely a little bit. Mostly because I just think Likely is a pretty dynamic player. Loved everything we saw from Zay Flowers today. He was great early. They're a machine. I feel a little embarrassed that like a month ago we were talking about how they probably needed to win sooner or later, and now here they are 4-2.
Yeah, one of my favorite, yeah, just back on the Commanders real quick. Of course, like one of my favorite storylines of the whole year is that Terry McLaurin is finally getting unleashed and like the, like get finally has the quarterback play that he deserves. There's a lot of these like longtime reception perception bros that are thriving this year, which I think actually perfectly transitioned us to the next game here, which is Bucks 51, Saints 27. And man, Chris Godwin, dude, it just continues his outrageous season with another 11 catches, two touchdowns on a team high 13 targets in this one. I will throw this, Andy Behrens, I'll throw this to you first, because, or I'll throw this take at you before I throw it to you. I know Baker Mayfield had three touchdowns or three interceptions in this game, and I know the probably the biggest fantasy story is what went on in the backfield. And weirdly, like watching this game, it didn't feel as if Mayfield had three interceptions, because I'm not sure there's a player that I've done a bigger 180 on in the last 2 years than Baker Mayfield. I said some things I really regret about Baker on this podcast, especially as it related to like what he was going to do to these Tampa Bay wide receivers, both of whom I have tremendous respect for. Mike Evans is Mike Evans. Chris Godwin has, I've always been a longtime Chris Godwin favorite. And I love the season that he's having. But at the end of his Panthers tenure, I was just like, dude, this is Mayfield's time as a starting quarterback in this league is over. And you know, we'll probably see Kyle Trask at some point when he signed with the Bucks.
Yeah.
Now I watch Baker, I'm like, I love watching this guy. I think he is, I think there are a few quarterbacks more just, I don't know how to say it other than dialed in to what their offense is doing right now than Baker Mayfield. He's just a really fun player, and he's executing this offense at extremely, extremely high level. And obviously, again, you see what happens when you have a pretty good run game against the Saints.
Yeah, like along with that, we're getting like the sassy version of Baker again. Every time he runs the ball, he gets up chirping at somebody. That's really fun. He's doing a lot of talking on the field.
He tried to throw like a block deep downfield for Bucky Irving. Or Sean Tucker. Yeah, it was Bucky Irving. And I was like, I mean, it wasn't an effective block or anything, but I mean, you got to give him points for trying.
Yeah, absolutely. Really fun game from him. I believe he lead the NFL in touchdown passes right now. I believe he does.
Yes.
That's wild, right? Like, and I kind of liked him and have him on some super flex teams, but this is well outside what I might have considered the reasonable range of outcomes. Great game from Godwin, who's having a great year. Not like I didn't think it was much of a surprise that Mike Evans was quiet. He is, you know, the whole history of the Lattimore-Evans relationship is they will get in one fight a game. Somebody might get thrown out, and there's not a lot of stats there. So Evans also dealt with maybe a little injury issue today. So there were, you know, that wasn't a shock, but a huge volume game from Godwin, and he was great. A couple of house calls in this one. And then the run game against the Saints, just absolutely silly. They ran for 277 yards. Baker got whatever he wanted on the ground. Sean Tucker was great. Obviously, Bucky Irving, like again, for like the third or fourth time this year, had the best run of the week. Just phenomenal performance. Just absolutely unstoppable. The Saints are such a weird team. Mm-hmm. like sometimes I think they're a good defense, and then, you know, here we are, 51 points.
I was going to say, like, that was going to be my whole point about the run game. Well, certainly in Baker's performance overall, this is definitely a good pass defense. It's not like, yeah, the Saints are not some pushover defense, right? I mean, yeah. I would say if the Saints had this offensive performance against that Bucks defense, I'd be like, yeah, well, the Bucks defense isn't that good. Statistically, they have not been a very good team. But statistically, the Saints were a good defense coming into this one, which I think makes it really hard to calibrate to the running game performance. I know nobody cares about my fantasy team, but I'm just going to say this anyways. We've talked about the Kings Classic, you know, league, Andy, where you got to start some goofy players. You got to do some weird stuff. I was facing, I know what your face is saying, and trust me, it's not a happy ending for me. because
I'm sorry.
Again, if you listen to the show, you know what the waiver wire looks like on this show. Ramondre Stevenson's out. None of my backup running backs are like, oh, you could start this guy and feel really, really good in the salary cap league. And I'm facing Scott Pianowski this week. I want to win this matchup. You know what? I'm looking at the two best waiver options are Sean Tucker and Hunter Lipke or whatever. And you know what? I'm all gassed up about high scoring game incoming. There are going to be a lot of passes thrown in Dallas. Nate's talking to me on the film room show about Hunter Lipke. Not Nate's fault, my fault. Personal accountability. I got jacked up about the Lipke stuff. Maybe he catches a couple cheapy passes, whatever. I pick up Lipke and start him. I lose to Scott. And could have had Sean Tucker, and obviously I did not. 136 yards on the ground, 9.7 yards per carry, one touchdown on the ground, another touchdown through the air, 3 for 56 as a receiver. Could have been on my team in the stupid Kings Classic League, and alas, it's on the waiver wire. Andy, what do we do? What do we do with this backfield now going forward?
That is really rough. That was going to be my question to you, but unfortunately, you beat me to it, right? Like, Bucky Irving fully met expectations in this one, too. This is exactly what you wanted to see. He saw 14 carries, over 80 yards, a touchdown. Again, like, the run of the week. It was the play on which Baker was throwing blocks downfield, 31 yards. Every week, he just does something electric. And Sean Tucker was better statistically. It is, at the very least, it is a team that probably doesn't need to roll out Rashad White until he is absolutely 100% fully healthy. And,
and
they have kind of, they got kind of an embarrassment of riches in the backfield. I mean, Irving will catch the ball. Tucker will catch the ball. Like, there's a lot of redundancy here. I don't think there's much of any chance that Rashad White gets a lead roll back. That would really surprise me. I don't think he's going to go away. He, you know, real life usefulness is there. He is a very good receiving option, and he can be, like, he's got some downfield receiving ability too. So I don't think he goes away, but now I think all three guys play, and I think this ends up being a bigger problem than I had previously anticipated for Bucky Irving, right? Like, this morning I led FFL talking about Bucky Irving and how excited I was for him to get an opportunity in the lead role, which he got. And then another guy was just as good. So I think this situation stays complicated.
I think so too. And yeah, I just think there's no chance Rashad White gets a lead rollback, but I also think there's about no chance that he gets completely phased out here.
Yeah.
At the same time, how do you put that Sean Tucker performance back in the bottle? Like, how do you put that genie back in the bottle, toothpaste back in the tube, whatever analogy you want to use? I have no idea, especially because this is a team that, like, the passing offense has looked good all year, but they'd have not had, like, a real consistent run game. And Sean Tucker's not a nobody either. I mean, if you don't know who Sean Tucker is, he was a high pedigree prospect coming out of college, but he went undrafted in the draft because he had, like, a heart issue or something like that. There was a medical situation that caused him to get pushed down the board. So he didn't earn a role as a rookie, but, like, okay, he's a rookie. Who cares? He clearly looks like a pretty good player at this point. So I have no idea what to do with this backfield going forward. Okay. On to the Saints side here. There were some moments for Spencer Rattler, for sure. Next Gen Stats notes that Spencer Rattler completed 10 of 13 passes for 137 yards and a touchdown across the Saints' first six drives of this game. After that, he completed just 12 of 26 for 106 yards and two interceptions across the final eight drives. So that is kind of how it felt watching this game. Like, oh, Spencer Rattler's keeping this thing interesting, and it kind of slipped away, which, look, the Bucks defense is we're dunking on the Bucks defense because they're not great in the secondary, and they don't have a great pass rush. But Todd Bowles does throw a lot at you from a blitz perspective. Definitely Jaden Daniels' worst game of the season came against this Bucks defense in week one. This is another rookie quarterback who's even less prepared to start. So I don't know what to make. Like, I'm not going to make any sweeping proclamations one way or another about Spencer Rattler, other than, okay, he was interesting. He got the ball to, like, Bub Means, and he definitely pushed the ball down the field, and he was aggressive, which is about all we kind of wanted to see from him at this point.
Yeah, not a clean game, couple of interceptions, five sacks, certainly not a clinic, but I also don't, like, I didn't think he was overmatched. I didn't think it was too fast for him. He was really aggressive. His best throws are always really impressive to me, which, you know, that's a bar that you have to clear as a rookie. And then the thing that makes it a little bit hard to judge is we didn't get Chris Olave for much of this game because he exited early with a concussion. So we still don't know what it looks like when we've got, when he's throwing to Olave, Shahid, Kamara, right? Like, we didn't have the full complement of receivers, including the very best receiver on the team in this one. So that was just a rough hand for him. And then next week, it's Denver. So even if you're moderately excited about what you saw from Spencer Rattler, and I saw enough to make me think that the offense can go at least 90%, 95% as far as it goes with Derek Carr. I don't think he's some huge downgrade. It's a really tough matchup on deck.
Yeah. And he's probably going to start for a little while, like 3 to 4 weeks was the sort of estimation there. Carr comes back early sometimes, so you know maybe he's back by week eight. But I agree with you; he's not going to play in week seven. Broncos, Chargers in week eight. There's definitely the maybe Carr's back in time for like week 9 and 10 against the Panthers and the Falcons, because those are like the juicy NFC South high scoring matchups we're probably expecting for the rest of the year. On that note, final game that we care about. God, these are bleak games that we care about, man. But it's going to get even bleaker going forward. Falcons 38, Panthers 20. I mean, this is kind of what you want from a Falcons like box score, right? Who comes away from this one feeling pissed? I don't think anybody, except for people that like, you know, desperation started Darnell Mooney or anything. Bijan Robinson gets in the box into the end zone twice. Drake London has over 70 yards and a touchdown. Kyle Pitts has 70 yards, which 52 of it came on one play, but shoot, you're not, no complaining if you have Kyle Pitts and he gets you 70 yards, right? So I think this offense continues to stack performances, continues to look better. And I also think, Andy, it's critical that they come off that Thursday night game where Kirk Cousins dropped back, what, like 60 freaking times? And instead, in this game, they put the ball, and a lot of it is, you know, they're ahead in the fourth quarter, things like that. But they put the ball in Tyler Allgeier's hands 18 times. They put the ball in Bijan Robinson's hands 15 times as a rusher, and great results kind of followed.
Yeah, and you know, with the caveat that it was the Panthers' defense,
of course.
This is just what you want to see, right? Like it was a one score game in the second half until it wasn't, and Atlanta was able to just completely put it away with just battering ram running from Allgeier and Robinson. And man, they're both great. They combined for 200 rushing yards. Allgeier is really good. And like, I feel like we've arrived at a point where even though almost every time I watch Bijan Robinson play, he's got a play or two where you're just like, oh man, that guy might be the best running back in the league. Like he's really exciting. And then Allgeier's good.
Yeah, right. Know?
Like, and he's good in a very different way. They're very complimentary. Like Allgeier, just in terms of making good decisions, pile moving, you know, like gets yards after while he's in the process of being tackled a lot of the time. Just a good player that you can punish a defense with. And this is the way, like, you need to salt away wins. I thought that was really impressive. London was good in this one. I think you're just generally right on the Atlanta side. It looked good. And again, you know, Kirk Cousins had a pretty quiet day fantasy wise. I thought it was, again, encouraging that he's not some rushing threat, but I thought he was moving in the pocket really well when he needed to.
Totally agree with that. And you're so right about Allgeier. That guy's good. And, you know, I said, I think it was a podcast with Sal at the beginning of the season where I said, one of my favorite things I've ever said on the podcast, which sounds like a stupid thing to say, but basically I said, like, if you draft Jahmyr Gibbs and you get pissed that you see David Montgomery like popping in touchdowns, you're not built for this hobby. You're just not built for this. You're not ready to play fantasy football. I'm almost kind of there with like every running back in the NFL at this point. It's like, okay, you drafted Bijan Robinson, you get pissed about Tyler Allgeier, like, you got to get over it. Tyler Allgeier is good. You get pissed that, like, you have Derrick Henry and Justice Hill's catching passes and making plays as a receiver, you're going to have to kind of get over that. Like, who really stands alone in their backfield right now, truly? I mean, maybe Alvin Kamara, and you know what? They probably could use somebody else to, like, spell Alvin Kamara every now and again. I mean, Saquon Barkley with the Eagles, I guess he's probably – Kyron Williams with the Rams, sure, but the list continues to get smaller and smaller and smaller. Like, even Breece Hall, they're playing on Monday. Guess what? Braylon Allen's pretty good. You can't just take the guy off the field just because people drafted him early in fantasy. And like, I'm sure that next year people will draft running backs in the first round, and there's going to be some useful other player in the backfield. So like, just get over it. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. You're just going to have to learn to live with that. Nothing useful was said there. Just me whining at things. We continue to get useful play out of Andy Dalton from a fantasy perspective. I'm a little. Not him individually, but Chuba Hubbard gets you another 92 yards on the ground here. Deontay Johnson, shoot, you could group him in. Doesn't feel as good because the team's not as good, but shoot, you can group him in with Terry McLaurin and Chris Godwin as kind of like guys having the best seasons of their career. Somehow Andy Dalton, it's like Jaden Daniels, Baker Mayfield, great. Andy Dalton elevating Deontay Johnson to the best season of his career. He has another 78 yards and a touchdown. I'm kind of I get confused every time we see a Deontay Johnson like start sit question. It's like, dude, just play Deontay Johnson. This should not be a question at this point anymore. But Andy, I'm a little worried that the Panthers are starting to lose games now. Dalton's turning the ball over. I'm a little bit back on like Bryce Young watch at this point.
Yeah, it's possible. There was a moment in this game, I believe, where Andy Dalton was like, it looked pretty clean. He hadn't thrown a pick yet. He had a couple of touchdowns. You know, no shame in trailing the Falcons by like a score, and then things got a little bit out of control, and we did get a couple of interceptions from Dalton, but for the most part, like, I don't know, the offense was still fully functional. I think you're right to be a little bit concerned that, man, if this gets out of hand for the Panthers, they're probably going to have to go back to Bryce Young. It would be a little weird if they didn't when they reach a point where, you know, the playoffs aren't coming. We're not landing on a winning season here. At some point, they probably do got to get back to Bryce. And Dalton's played, you know, well, but not overwhelmingly, you know, efficient or anything like that. I thought Leggett finds the end zone again. That was good to see. You know, in the same vein of Tyler Allgeier being pretty good, Chuba Hubbard looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Like that guy, you know, and I wasn't a huge fan maybe a couple of years ago, and I feel like I was kind of a late arrival to this, but
same.
He's, you know, he's pretty patient and makes good choices, and like when he makes those choices, he goes, you know, like made just a ton of good decisions today. And I, at this point, I wonder, you know, man, they're going to be able to just ease in Jonathan Brooks. Like they got a million problems, but they certainly don't need to drop Jonathan. Like running back is not one of those problems right now. And they don't need to drop Jonathan Brooks into any kind of featured role or any kind of 50% of the backfield sort of role. Hubbard's playing extremely well.
All right, let's take our first break, and when we come back, let's get into the games we sort of care about from week 6. All right, we're back, and folks, if you thought it was rough in that first section, I mean, talk about rough. Lions 47, Cowboys 9. This is from Zach Wolchuk on Twitter. The last time the Cowboys gave up multiple 44-plus point games in a season was the expansion year in 1960. Including last year's playoffs, the Cowboys have allowed 44-plus points in 3 of their last 4 home games. This is Jerry Jones' worst home loss in his 35 years of ownership. I believe this was Colin's note on the outline. It was also his 82nd birthday, so happy birthday, Jerry Jones. And if I could just say one more painful Cowboys fan note, you know, I've mentioned this before. My sister and my brother-in-law are Cowboys fans. I've mentioned that on the show. Don't ask me, you know, whatever. God help them. They, in good news, welcomed their second child earlier this week. Oh. So congratulations to the Angels, and congratulations to the little boy Cooper. He's a beautiful, healthy boy, an absolute stud already. Big quarterback hands, so that's exciting. He got to find out on his first Cowboy Sunday. So again, congratulations to the family. Pretty rough first Sunday as a Cowboys fan for Cooper. So congratulations again, shout out to them. But my God, what a despicable Sunday for the Cowboys.
Came into the world, and his namesake, Cooper Rush got some snaps at quarterback.
I didn't even think of that.
He's got that going for him. Yeah, this man, this was just not a competitive game. And we've talked around the Cowboys defense right now and the situation it's in. It didn't come into the season playing up to expectations, and now it's just decimated by injuries. So that's looking pretty rough. The Lions just got whatever they wanted, and which was fine. Like, I don't know, I'm a fantasy guy. That was really fun. But man, the Cowboys not being able to answer was really disturbing. I didn't expect anything from the Cowboys run game in this one. I'm not, you know, not terribly impressed by anybody in that backfield necessarily, but I thought we'd get a little something from the passing game. Just a poor game from Dak. like late in a game like this, the second interception didn't bother me. The first interception was terrible.
Yeah,
that
terrible.
Was just an absolutely terrible ball. And a guy that you have to see waiting in front of CeeDee Lamb in the end zone. So that was a rough watch. So poor game from Dak. CeeDee kind of got home in the box score, right? 7 catches, 89 yards. That's fine. Nobody else did a thing that we need to care about. I am definitely not going to twist the knife on producer Colin here, because man, I survived the Jay Cutler years and I came through the Trubisky years, right? Like I know what it is to sit through a game that is utterly non-competitive against a team, not in this case, not in the division necessarily, but somebody that you know you got to get through in order to, you know, actually make a postseason run, to win a division, something like that. And man, there's not even close to where the Lions are right now.
No, not even close. And man, it just feels so like all the things that could be problems for the Cowboys going, at least on offense, going to the year, kind of are problems. They don't have a second pick, like a true, like Jalen Tolbert's a fine player. Jake Ferguson's a good tight end. But they have no running game. They have no true like secondary difference maker beyond CeeDee Lamb. This is like the worst kind of matchup for them too, with a team that just plays a ton of man coverage and can get after you, can rush the passer. Like, it's hard to say watching the broadcast, but it didn't feel like Dak had any easy throws, easy open throws. He sure as hell did not have a lot of time back there either. And he's been weirdly good for two-ish mistakes a game, that he's almost in like that Trevor Lawrence zone where I think Dak's a better quarterback than Trevor Lawrence, but generally, but he's in that Trevor Lawrence zone where it's like nothing is really going right around him, but also he's sort of contributing to the problems too. That's a tough spot to be in, because you kind of need him to be perfect in this offense.
Yeah,
and especially with these players around him. Not ideal. I don't think we learned anything new about the Cowboys from a fantasy perspective, other than if you were really counting on Rico Dowdle to be like a set it and forget it starter after what he did. I don't know. He might be taking over the backfield in normal games, but in a game like this, it's just you're kind of banged. Lions side of things here. Yeah, the Cowboys defense stinks. They did exactly what we expected them to do. They ran the hell out of the ball, but they continue to get big plays in the passing game. Your boy Sam Laporta gets back on the map with the 52-yard touchdown.
Finally.
Fine, I can feel the exhale over there from you. And Jameson Williams, man, it's just like it's pretty sick that like almost every game we just get a one or two plays where it's like, man, that's crazy that this offense was already so good and they just drop like a guy who can really talk about make a difference for them on a couple of plays. They just like drop that guy in there. He has 76 yards and a touchdown in this game.
And had a touchdown wiped out by penalty too. Great game from him. Making it look kind of easy right now. Dave Montgomery was great. Just got paid, just got extended a little bit. He was fantastic. They were clicking. Obviously the big news on the Lions side was the injury to Aiden Hutchinson, which is not going to be good news. It was a pretty gruesome injury.
Schefter said that he underwent immediate surgery at a Dallas area hospital for what the team is now calling a broken tibia. It was brutal.
Yeah. Had that look. I couldn't, we were talking before the podcast. I couldn't see what it was the first time. So I watched it a second time and then I saw it and it's terrible. So, best wishes to him on a smooth recovery, because that was, I don't know, anytime you see like every player on the field surrounding a guy like that is a rough scene. So that is, you know, the biggest worry coming out of that game for Detroit. But my goodness, that is a Death Star offense. And again, some of it is you're facing a kind of lifeless defense that is missing its best players. And, so they were bound to score. But man, they got whatever they wanted.
All right, let's move on to Texans 41, Patriots 21. I actually want to start on the Patriots side of things first, Andy, because I know you felt pretty optimistic about Drake May coming out of the start. You mentioned it earlier. I kind of shared those opinions as well.
Yeah, man, his first touchdown pass was one of the prettiest throws of the day. Beautiful deep ball, a lot of air under it. That was great. We know he's got, I mean, he ran for, I think it was 32 yards in this one. We know he's got more rushing upside than that. He is a pretty dynamic runner, dual threat guy. And then he just kept coming. This was not, they were outgunned. They were not going to beat, the Texans on a day that the Texans put up 41 points. And it wasn't, It wasn't perfect for May either. He threw a couple of interceptions. One was a bad ball. The other was a batted pass that got popped up in the air and somebody came down with it. Sacked a few times. So it wasn't perfect. But like, man, his receiving corps is not perfect either. And he made, I don't know, I thought he made the most of it. I thought he looked like a guy who can fully take advantage of a matchup with the Jaguars next week.
Right.
Which, like, for fantasy purposes is what we care about. And I would feel, I mean, you know, you just lost by 20. But if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm feeling pretty good about my young quarterback. And I feel like Drake May is kind of a rising tide for the offense.
So I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I couldn't care less that like the Patriots lose this game. I really couldn't care less that he has like three turnovers. You know, moving to Drake May is not a move to like save the season or something like that. It's not. Yeah. It's not as if okay, now all their problems will be fixed. We know they're a deeply, deeply flawed team, but man, he gives them some pop. You know, his touchdown was the one touchdown to Kayshon Booty was like 51.7 completed air yards. It was a heater of a throw, or air distance. So like truly as the crow flies, yeah. it was a heater of a pass. He led the team in rushing with 36 yards, but he led the team in rushing. Immediately you could see that, okay, he is an athleticism advantage, which was obviously going to be the case. The Jaguars play all that man coverage next week. I don't know what Drake May's rushing yard prop is going to be set at. It was like 25.5 this week, which was just pathetically low, but I'm pretty much ready to take the over on that next week in London as well. Nothing better than starting your game off or starting your Sunday off early morning with a pathetic prop on Drake May's rushing yards, but that'll probably be me. But yeah, you know, I made my feelings on this pretty clear on the podcast this week. People seemed like, oh, Drake May was going to die in this game, or man, this is going to ruin him forever because they're starting him against the Texans. Yeah, like Will Anderson had three sacks. Danielle Hunter had another sack. Whoop-de-doo. Like the guy made it out of here, and he looks like he can make some plays. I don't understand this narrative of like why he should not be playing right now. He looked he looked like a rookie quarterback, made a lot of mistakes, but he also moved the offense a little bit. So I do think Drake May in like bye weeks and super flex leagues is going to be a fantasy starter just because of that rushing ability. And yeah, I mean, DeMario Douglas is the guy that gets going here. Kayshon Booty gets a touchdown. Hunter Henry gets in the end zone. I mean, we didn't see a lot of that during the Jacoby Brissett era. So at least that's mildly interesting. Oh yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is, I think, three of the last four games, DeMario Douglas has 9 targets. So there's a lot of volume here. Again, you got a super user-friendly defense coming up, too. So that's a guy who probably needs to get rostered in a lot more leagues.
Agree. I think he, even if, like, Polk is the rookie, and I know he pops in some metrics, I think they're playing him out of position. I think he's not an X receiver. They're playing him an X receiver. Not a good mix there. He doesn't look comfortable at that position. I don't think he'll ever be like fully optimized as an X receiver. So they need that guy. Like, I think if they have an X emerge, and I know Kayshon Booty has 3 for 59 and a touch here, I don't think he is that guy. So we'll see. That could at least be better days ahead for him. He only has 1 for 4. But for now, yeah, Douglas is absolutely the best receiver on that roster. On the Texans side of things here, pretty good to have Joe Mixon. Like, I, you know, the Texans have had 2 games where they've run the ball really well. Week 1 and then week 6. And then there was 4 pretty much disgusting games in the middle. Tell me what happened to week 1 and week 6. Those are the games that Joe Mixon started and finished. I don't think those are a coincidence.
My one of my favorite moments of this fantasy season was getting to drop Cam Akers in, like, you know, back-to-back-to-back leagues. I didn't even add anybody like late this week. Once we really knew that Joe Mixon was coming back, I couldn't have felt better about those drops. Mixon looked awesome. I thought it was a really encouraging game for Tank Dell, and that you know, talked about him a little bit. He's pretty clearly not back to where he was last season. But this was a lot of volume. He finds the end zone. That was good to see. Stroud was great again. Pretty predictable box score from the Texans, but again, a very encouraging outing from Mixon.
Yeah, Tank Dell gets you 7 for 57 and a touchdown here on a team high 9 targets. Dalton Schultz has 8. Steph Diggs has 7 targets. He looks great in this game. I think he's still clearly their best receiver without Nico Collins. Yeah, I had a couple people, because I posted the video about my analysis on Tank Dell and how I don't think he looks... I think he pretty clearly doesn't look the same as he did last year. Had a couple of like goofballs chirping at me after Tank Dell scores a red zone touch. I'm like, you really couldn't possibly be asking to be taken seriously if you're chirping about that afterwards. Cause yeah, I mean, I think you watch the game. Tank Dell's like clearly not back, but he's still a really good receiver, and he has higher to climb. I'm very optimistic that Tank will be like back and ready to rock at some point. But just seeing him get 9 targets and score a touchdown, he's a fantasy starter now going forward.
People should know that that's not like an insult to say that he's not where he was last year. Go back and watch him last year. He was really fun. That guy was explosive. That guy was like a yards after catch machine, big play machine. It's not insulting to say that after a significant injury, you're not quite that guy just yet. I think he can get back there. And this was an encouraging sign.
Speaking of encouraging too, Damian Pierce, 8 carries, 76 yards and a touchdown. I know that's inflated by his one long touchdown run, but he also hasn't played since week 1, pretty clearly the second running back there. So, yeah, if anything ever happens to Mixon again, I think Pierce will be the beneficiary. Let's stay in the AFC South and go with Colts 20, Titans 17. I know this game is closer than some of the other ones we've talked about in this section, but I don't know, Andy, did you learn anything from Colts and Titans in this one?
Man, congrats to this game for making it into this section and not the email section of the of the show. I know it was close. I didn't see a lot to love in this game. I think Levis is still. I think he's still pretty glitchy. there wasn't like a catastrophic Levis mistake that changed the whole game and left you, you know, slack jawed necessarily, but some throws that just came out a little weird. He wasn't great. He doesn't even reach 100 yards in this one. Tony Pollard's really good. I think Tony Pollard's playing very well, and it's going to get kind of overlooked in the context of this season. Very difficult to start any Titans receivers with Levis being not only Will Levis, but like a compromised version of Will Levis. That's rough. And then on the Colts side, that, you know, I want to say a bunch of nice things about Josh Downs, about Michael Pittman. They played great. It was phenomenal that Pittman even played when we thought he was going to hit IR like just a few days ago. Downs was great. I don't know exactly what this looks like when Anthony Richardson is back. Hopefully, and Anthony Richardson has to come back for this team. He's going to start. Flacco's fine, but he wasn't flawless today either. Right. Like he's not playing perfect football, and he's, you know, sort of end stage Joe Flacco. So we're not going to keep rolling that guy out there in place of someone that we think is a building block for the franchise. So Richardson is going to play again. I just hope we can get this version of like Josh Downs and Pittman along with Richardson when he's starting.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just like getting high on copium here, but I feel like we can get this performance out of Josh Downs and Michael Pittman, like 3 for 35 and a touchdown for Pittman, 7 for 66 and a touchdown for Downs. Like I think we can get that with Anthony Richardson under center. The reason I thought this game was important was just because Joe, we come out of this game, and I'm not saying it's enough already with the Joe Flacco discourse, but like we're pretty close to enough already with the Joe Flacco discourse. Yeah. Flacco's a very, very good backup level quarterback who should do this every year for some kind of like a just reclamation for a bad offense every year that's like having issues with its quarterback. I honestly would kind of love him on a lot of other teams this year, but 5 yards per attempt today against a good Titans defense. I don't know that we're adding that much by having Joe Flacco in the mix here. So we will get Anthony Richardson when he's healthy. There's no chance of that. On the other side, Calvin Ridley, 8 targets, 0 catches, and he was pissed about it after the game. He had a profanity laden, and he apologized. Like, I'm sorry for cursing, but he was so frustrated talking to reporters after the game. But that's kind of the way it is in the Titans offense right now. You're right, Andy. You should have petitioned this game to be an email. I don't really know. I don't have anything else to say about it unless you do.
Nope. I think Ridley is a plausible drop right now. Not his fault necessarily, but I think that's where we're at.
Yeah. Sort of some his fault too, but you know, alas. All right, again, this game definitely could have been an email too, but it's in this section for whatever reason. Chargers 23, Broncos 16. We at least had some notable performances, like things to take note of in this game, including J.K. Dobbins, obviously monster game on the Chargers side, but Kimani Vidal, in the absence of Gus Edwards, also scored a touchdown as a receiver. The Chargers offense kind of came out trying to throw the hell out of the ball in the first quarter to middling results, but at least they tried to do it, something they did not do before the bye.
Yeah, Vidal was obviously super impressive. First NFL touch is a wheel route that goes for a long touchdown. He makes a nice catch on it, too. Great play. He also then, like, he spiked the ball and spiked it like against the, you know, like the wall behind the end zone. I hope he gets that ball back. Like that was kind of a, it was kind of a weird oversight by him. Good game from him, but he did most of his damage on that play and didn't actually like, didn't get a ton of touches after it either. So that's a little perplexing because I think we all got pretty excited to see this guy who's been in the holster for, you know, like a month, finally do something and immediately produces, and then didn't really use him a whole lot. But man, Dobbins was great. No complaints there. 25 attempts, nearly 100 yards, scores a touchdown. He was really good. On the other side, I guess I'd give Denver credit for, you know, not folding the tents when they were down 20-0. This game felt over and it got a little bit competitive at the end, and it came down to, you know, onside kick that was nearly recovered. Like, I don't know, it got interesting at the end, and it had no reason to get interesting. Bo Nix is kind of a wild ride, but man, Bo Nix taunting a defender when he was down 20 after a nice first down run was, he's a little salty. He's a little spicy. He's kind of fun.
He is definitely a little spicy. That's for sure. Ladd McConkey, if you're frustrated about the final line here, 8 targets, 4 catches, 40 something yards. He left the game twice. Once got tested for a concussion, yeah. Had another injury as well. I would not be like quick to drop him or anything like that. I think he is a definite like hold the faith type of player. All right, on that note, let's take a break and then we'll toss to our final section, the games that could have been email here in week 6. All right, Andy, we're back. First game that could have been an email. Steelers 32, Raiders 15. I mean, the Raiders, I don't even know what to say about the Raiders at this point. And the Steelers, it's a pretty interesting performance from your guy, Justin Fields, here. 2 touchdowns as a runner. That, honestly, like, those have been the best plays for the Steelers offense of late, is like Justin Fields just running the ball around the goal line.
Yeah, not a competitive game at all. The Raiders, not a particularly competitive team in this version. Aiden O'Connell throwing to DJ Turner and, you know, but like Bowers was good. I don't want to. You know, Bowers had like 9 catches in this game and is in for exactly this line going forward. If this is what we're going to get from the Raiders offense, right? It was 9 catches, 71 yards. He draws 10 targets. He's going to do that every week and finish as a top 3 fantasy tight end this year. He's probably going to lead the position in catches, yards, because, man, if they actually do trade Devontae Adams, and I realize that seems a little bit up in the air right now, this is just a bare cupboard. There's just not a lot here. Alexander Mattison gave you the game that you probably should have expected. Really inefficient. Scored 1 touchdown, had another one called back by penalty. But, I mean, this team's going to commit a lot of penalties. They're going to have some negated plays. That's just not a fun team to watch right now. I do not envy Fitz being trapped in a season of watching this version of the Raiders.
Now, it felt like if there were 100 outcomes before the season for the Raiders, 99 of them were like pretty pointless, and it feels like we're in one of those. Yeah. 9. We are not in the 1 out of 100. Let's just put it that way. I just feel like this team is kind of going nowhere. And yeah, obviously there can be better fantasy days for players in this offense, I guess, but they're going to kind of need to win this standoff with Devontae Adams, which I think after some of the reporting on Sunday, there's a chance they do win this standoff with Adams. They're just like, okay, nobody wants to trade us very much for you. We don't want to just trade you for no reason, so you're going to come and have to play out the rest of the season for us. I think there's a chance that actually happens based on sort of the reporting on that right now, but that could obviously change going forward. Nice game from Najee Harris, of course, after like everybody probably gave up on him after a Sunday night performance against the Cowboys' hideous run defense. He still manages to go over 100 yards and a touchdown in this game. Don't know that there's too much to take away from that one. Let's move on to the next game that could have been an email. This is competitive, but Eagles 20, Browns 16. I don't know, man. Just obviously every Browns game is just going to be depressing at this point because they're just hopelessly pitiful on offense. And talk about stuck in a loop. Kevin Stefanski is going to be stuck in a loop for this entire season. And all of these Browns players are going to be stuck in a loop for this entire season. Nick Chubb probably coming back next week. Is that enough to save the Browns? Probably not. At least on the Eagles side of it, we got the good receivers back in our lives.
Yeah, and they win this game because those receivers came back, right? Like this being a 4-point game is kind of wild. And you know, Miles Garrett is such a game wrecker. He made a play like that. Cleveland has some dudes, but they're going to roll out a Deshaun Watson offense apparently all year. Like Stefanski had to immediately say after the game that they're not making a change at quarterback. If that's the case, they're not going to cross 20 points anytime soon unless the defense scores twice. It's just grim. Philadelphia basically wins this game because they get AJ Brown and Devontae Smith back, and they both made plays. Brown was great. Brown was tremendous in this one. So that was really good to see. We've got the head coach. We got our head coach yelling at the crowd after this one, after a 4-point win over the Deshaun Watson led Browns. Okay.
Yeah, but cool. He shaved his head. Didn't you see? how many people like think their swag level goes up after shaving their head? As somebody that shaved my head somewhat recently was like, yeah, terrible call. Let's do what we can to grow this thing back. all respect to the people who pull off the buzzed head. I don't think I did. That's why I went back. But all respect to the people that do pull off the buzzed head. I don't know that Nick Sirianni, like, I don't know that he should have had his swag levels kind of up after that buzzed head.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, 4-point win over this version of the Cleveland Browns just should not do that.
Yeah, nothing much else to add here. Jerome Ford, hamstring injury, but like I said, Nick Chubb comes back next week, so that's exciting. Okay, final game here that could have been an email and final game of the Week 6 Sunday slate. Packers 34, Cardinals 13. Marvin Harrison left this game with a concussion after just two targets. Yeah. That was a bummer. Dontavian Wicks caught a pass, immediately left with a shoulder injury. I think this game probably I disrespected it a little by putting it in the email category because there are at least some interesting threads to pull from this game. But I don't know, Andy. It was still rather like a laissez-faire, non-competitive game.
Yeah, no. Arizona barely showing up in this one. And the Harrison injury is obviously part of that. That's really too bad because they desperately needed some weapons to hang with Green Bay on a day like this. Great day from Jordan Love. Like, this is kind of the version of the Packers passing game that we expected and feared to a certain extent coming into the season, right? Like, the only safe way to invest in this is to have Jordan Love because, like, he completes 22 balls to 9 different receivers. I know that Romeo Doubs had a game, but like, he's going to have a day once every 5 or 6 weeks. Christian Watson gets back in the end zone, but Reed is going to be the one guy that we're just rolling out there each week. He looks a little different, but man, it's a great passing game where it's really, really hard to trust any specific individual receivers. Part of me wants to pick out a Green Bay receiver that I can hype in pickups, but I can't tell you who the guy is going to be next week. So that's a little bit difficult. Good game from Josh Jacobs. James Conner picked up, maybe it was an ankle injury. I don't know exactly what it was. He was he seemed a little bit compromised on the sideline for a while, but came back into the game. Hopefully there's nothing there long term.
Yeah, Trey Benson was someone who got dropped in a bunch of spots. Probably should be on the end of benches just in case anything does happen to James Conner, a guy who does get banged up at different points. The Packers will get the Texans next. Another 1 p.m. game for the Houston Texans. What
fun one.
What are we doing here, NFL schedule makers? Who the hell is playing on the primetime games in Week 7? I'm sure it's like a great game, so I'm speaking like an idiot here without even knowing. But yeah, I'm excited to see what the Packers do going forward in this receiver room. It was nice to see guys like Dobbs back out there and playing pretty well, and Christian Watson scoring on a big post route. Feels like Jordan Love's good for one big post route touchdown every single game, which is pretty exciting. Andy, any awards to give out this week? Vulture of the Week, Unsung Hero, WTF of the Week?
I don't think he's an unsung hero exactly because he had kind of a noisy game for fantasy. But shout out to Cole Kmet for not just the 2 touchdowns, but taking over as his team's long snapper is crazy. Like, and he was good at it. There were no gaffes from Cole Kmet, like long snapping. That's just such like a weird niche skill that if you're going to be any good at it, you have to do it every day for probably hours a day. And by God, some of the local reporters were even joking about how Cole Kmet has described having to step in as the emergency long snapper as his absolute nightmare scenario. And he did it. He did it flawlessly, and he did it on a day that he found the end zone a couple times. So he was already a hero, but I think he gets some unsung hero recognition here too.
Absolutely. I would also say that Sean Tucker probably can be the vulture of the week, because you were like a Bucky Irving bro and you had to like, man, no Rashad White, let's go. He's going to get this backfield all to himself. And Sean Tucker kind of just balled for the entire game. He wasn't just like, oh, I'm here in cleanup duty or anything like that. Like, no, he was involved with the entire proceeding. He was definitely there. I feel like Gabe Davis could be the WTF of the week just because of the performance that he had. And like, you know, there's a lot of awards we could give out just on that London game in the very early hours of Sunday morning. But I think, Andy, that is going to do it. It was a weird week six, man. A lot of like just
very weird,
bizarre performances and non-competitive games.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, really, really sorry, producer Colin. What he's actually kind of an unsung hero for soldiering on and actually producing this podcast after his Cowboys were treated the way they were.
Yeah, shout out to producer Colin, who sent some very funny, unhinged texts to us as we were preparing for the podcast here today. I will not read them off because it's best to keep those things in private. That is going to do it for us on this show. Tomorrow, Dalton Del Don joins me for the post week six panic meter. Please send in your panic to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Again, was disappointed with the email submissions last week, so I'd like you all to bring it this week. And I'm sure there are things that you are panicked about. I'm a little panicked about things, but I'm going to try to remain calm, collected. We do have to address the coping corner. I mean, my God, like the amount of players that are in the coping corner that scored touchdowns this last week. We will definitely have a discussion about the stupid coping corner. Excellent. Yes, let's do all that tomorrow. Until then, we're out.